Thank you.
So, hi, welcome everyone, good morning. I see that you had a great night, I think similar to mine. So, unfortunately, Robert Douglas couldn't make it, so I had to jump in. I apologize for those of you who have actually seen this presentation in Ljubljana before, and in DrupalCamp Hungary before, and there's no other one, but this has kind of been a recycled topic for me. It's something that I find quite fascinating. Enterprise Drupal is essentially what we work with every day when we work with larger clients, and the fundamental, this talk really is about the fundamental differences between how you tackle a small client in comparison to a really big one. A little bit about me, as the presenter kindly said, I work for Acquia. I'm a consultant. I travel around the world and collect air miles. But and on top of that, I also advise clients on how to use Drupal. I usually do some sort of architecture workshops, or technical help with clients. And I have the privilege of working with really large clients, from Disney to General Electric to other huge names that you've probably heard. This is not going to be a technical talk. This is more about the business aspects and the kind of the soft skills around Drupal and around working with Drupal. I will try to introduce or explain how the product vision is really important for clients, how the boring things, processes, can be actually a really valuable tool and is something that most of these large clients expect, and what sort of processes these are. And after all, how Drupal actually fits into this quite chaotic world. I know that my background is in the Drupal world is I used to be a freelancer, working for small shops. So for me, these were the key issues that I had to understand and tackle to actually be able to help several of these large clients. So what really is enterprise? Where would you say that the client is enterprise or just a small business? Large clients are usually fall into the enterprise category, but even though the client is large, they always have projects that are small scale, small budget. They don't need all the processes. They outsource a small marketing or branding page. But usually, large clients will have built-in processes, and that really is the distinction between a small shop, a small company, and an enterprise one, is that they really love processes. They love the documented things, the documented way of doing things. And on top of that, they love products. Product is something that's quite hard to, I guess, tackle at first in the Drupal world. Because when you think about Drupal itself is not really a product. It's a tool for developers to build other products out. Actually, Balint is going to have a really interesting talk later today about how you can build a product out of Drupal, but Drupal itself is not a product. If you think about products that you're using, Windows or Word or Gmail, for instance, those are things that, if you think about them, you immediately know what they're good for, what they're built for, and that makes them really easy to sell as well. It's hard to sell Drupal itself because it's a generic tool, it's a framework. What is it really? It's like a bunch of Lego pieces. As long as it's somehow productized, it's going to be immediately a lot easier to sell to a client. So large companies love products. They love something that's quite easy to understand. And I've seen a lot of small shops or development companies struggle with actually the sales aspect, to actually be able to go to a client and say, hey, well, this is why you need to use Drupal, and have them buy into it. It's once a large company gets rolling on a technology, it's going to be immediately a lot easier because they want massive support, they want consistent code base and everything, but until then, it's quite a hard journey to actually get into a company. One of the really interesting things I've seen about the adaptation of Drupal, or adoption of Drupal, is actually counterintuitive to this, or at least to me it was, is that because Drupal is free, everyone can start building it, you will find that small, there are small initiatives locally where developers, internal developers to the company, will start playing around with Drupal. They start exploring technologies. And not once I've seen Drupal being adopted because it was brought in and recommended by one of their employees, one of the developers. And that's something really interesting to see. The other thing that these large companies look at, apart from being a product, is what sort of enterprise-y features, what sort of processes are around Drupal. And I will talk about these processes a little bit later. I know that I mentioned processes a lot, but this is quite an abstract term. What is a process? Is, you know, how you develop a process or how you test is a process? Well, all of this is, but later on I'll give you a few more concrete examples. So how does Drupal work as a product? What sort of good products are there that are built with Drupal that are easy to sell because they have a clear message, a good branding, a good visual look and feel, which is, for us, for developers, it's not always the key, the priority. But if you've ever talked to a client and showed them Garland, then you will immediately understand why it is important for a client to have something that looks nice. So visual design is really important. If you think about the Commerce Kickstart, that's basically was built partially with this in mind. It has beautiful design, it's responsive, it demonstrates all of those visual capabilities that actually highlight the power of this platform. Then there is Drupal Commons, which is developed by Acquia, which is a kind of an intranet system. Then you have all other distributions, the Scald Galaxy, for instance, which is demonstrating the Scald module and its usage. And I'm sure there are plenty of other ones that I don't know about. These are distributions that are built with the product mindset. There are other distributions like Panoply, for instance, but I'm not sure if that's kind of with the same philosophy of, here's a product, take it, use it. One of the other big factors in Drupal as a product is that it just works and actually fulfills the purpose that you sell it for. It doesn't do more, but it also doesn't do less. Drupal is really extensive, you can change it, you can customize it, but all of these distributions, they do what they're supposed to do. So it simply just works out of the box. They don't need any customization. It may not do everything that they want, but I've seen that a lot of clients understands the concept of being given something that's fixed rather than being asked, okay, so what do you really want? It's somehow this creative process has been kind of halted with all of these ready and closed source products that they were given. It's really hard to actually talk to a client and ask and get this information out of them. What do you really want? They don't really know. And having something that they can look at, they can start working with, and after that, figure out what they actually need from that onwards. So processes, why are these processes so important? What really is a process? In my mind, process is something that you document and you describe how to do a certain thing. We all make mistakes. We need to have an easy and reliable way of either reducing the amount of mistakes we make and recovering from it. So doing testing, for instance, making sure that the quality of your work is consistent is extremely vital. If you build a process around testing, then you make sure that you will always test the same thing. So just by actually making a checklist, like a pre-flight checklist, it will immediately help with rigorously testing the same items every single time. And that's already a process. That's already a fixed checklist of things that you need to do. So when I say that companies love processes, what I really mean is they need to have these checklists. They need to know what to perform in order to have a reliable and stable build. It's not really acceptable to push something to production and then have it fail. Well, big companies still do that, but it's not ideal. So one of the things that people always look at is testing, unit testing, functional testing, how to actually make sure that the code that you produce is stays, well, as the project goes on, it stays functional. Then processes around deployment. And this is something that one might feel that Drupal is kind of lacking. If you think about yesterday's talk about the configuration management, which is specifically was introduced because of this demand that it's really hard to build a process around deployment where you cannot really decouple the configuration from the database. You think about the typical deployment workflow where you have something, a development playground, you have a testing environment, and then you have production. If you think about the way the code migrates, it will first live on development, everybody will work on it, then it goes to QA, people will start testing it, and once they're happy with it, then the code and the application changes will go onto the production. And the big problem before Drupal 8 and before features was that, well, it's fine that the code can go on, but the content, when people are creating content on the live site, that lives on production. I mean, that's the, you know, the application content. How do we put that back, and how do we introduce changes that also live in the database? And that's why features module was introduced, which has a few issues, and that's why the whole CMI initiative is so important, that we finally have a way of decoupling this and provide these companies and provide these clients a process around deployment. The other important factor, of course, is version tracking, to keep track of the code changes as you go along. Unfortunately, I still see sometimes clients that don't have version tracking. It's amazing how they can actually still make money. And all of these processes basically ensure that the whole process, the whole development of the whole building the application is maintainable. If I go off sick or if I drop off dead, then people can carry on because there's a clearly documented way on how to work with a given project. If you want to introduce more members, more people to the team to speed up development, then having these processes will help a great deal. So the project is transferable, it will not fall on its face. The other, I've talked about products, but I mean, how many clients do we have that really just want a kickstart or just an intranet? Never happens, really. So one of the things that we at Acquia are trying to sell or market to these large clients is the web experience management, which sounds like a lot of buzzwords, but it actually makes some sort of sense, I think. It's essentially the combination of the good old content management system, so you can have content tagging and all sorts of stuff. But on top of that, most of these clients will also want things added on, spam filtering, for instance, some sort of analytics packaged in. Everybody knows that using internal Drupal statistics is a bad idea usually. Email marketing, and some sort of media management or document management behind it and integrating with the site. And that, this whole, basically, a set of these features makes this WAM out of Drupal, and this is something that a lot of large clients look for. So, what are the typical ingredients for some of these large projects? I've tried to collect a few that I think are quite important, and feel free to add to it. This is it's kind of a work in progress. I think one of the key things that I see in all of my architecture workshops is content workflow. People are used to having their own internal content workflows, having editorial workflows before pushing content to production. So they want to have different privileges to different people. Say if a secretary writes a post about maybe this Drupal camp, then he or she shouldn't be able to make it live, shouldn't be able to publish it, because it has to go through some sort of review so that it gets approved and then finally it gets pushed out. These internal content workflows are usually, it can be complicated or less complicated, but these need to be implemented in Drupal. sometimes companies find a way around that. I've seen companies that actually do complete database dump from their development environment and they import that onto production. Obviously, that's a somewhat slow process. But there are a few good modules for actually implementing changes like that. For instance, the workbench and workflow modules can usually give you all the functionality that you might require. But still, Drupal is not necessarily the best tool when it comes to content workflow. If you think about how to preview a structural change, for instance, if you want to say, okay, you wrote all of these posts, but now you want to review how it will look on the front page. Well, there's no really good way in Drupal to do that. You need to set up the view accordingly so that it shows you in respect. And the point is that it's quite a complicated thing to do. So keeping things simple, even when talking to the clients and trying to sell these, is usually a good idea. The next thing is digital asset management. This is something that I think Drupal still somewhat struggles with. It's essentially the reuse of media-related things, images and videos and documents, across the whole site. What sort of modules do you use to kind of have media reuse across sites? Media module, probably. Who has used, for instance, Scald? What was your impression? So media module Scald, you can also just create nodes, for instance, and reference them. And there are ways to go around this problem, but it's still something that's kind of, it feels a little bit like Wild Wild West in this sense. So as I go along with these slides, which actually just restructured this morning, I have this sensation that Drupal is not really ready for the enterprise. And maybe that's somewhat true. Although most of these problems can be solved, it's just that none of these are really out of the box and everybody's happy with it. For instance, there's Scald and Media, two competing ideas and modules around the same problem, and neither of them really solves it properly for various reasons. So I think Drupal might need some more time to mature, but as Drupal 8 comes along, configuration management, for instance, becomes easier, and I expect that media management will too. I just wanted to speak a little bit about configuration management, because usually this is one of the, whatever developers think about Drupal, and they state how not enterprise ready it is, that's usually around configuration management. The main problem with configuration is that Drupal configuration used to, at least until Drupal 7, it lives in the database. So when you're trying to push and you're trying to integrate with your deployment workflow, the whole configuration is tied into your content. And the direction of this deployment is completely opposite to the content, because content is created on production and then is moved back to development, whereas changes and configuration is actually part of the application and has to go from development to production. Various things can be considered configuration, any views displays, panels configurations, display seat things, variables, and all sorts of things are all configuration and part of this problem. And we have features, which is a module that allows you to export this into part of, to be part of your application code base, and then it can be part of the workflow. To more or less satisfaction of everyone. But I think we all had problems at one point with features. It's not really, it's as I think Espantel yesterday said, the big problem with this is that it's, the whole idea is not really supported by the Drupal core itself. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why I'm really excited about Drupal 8, because this will finally solve this problem. The other thing that, the other thing that clients get anxious about is testing. And not just testing on the application side, but testing the impact of their changes to the clients. And although I know that there's a multivariate testing module for Drupal, it's kind of, I haven't used it in a while. The main idea behind multivariate testing is that before you actually make a change to your website, you reposition a cart, you reposition the buying button on a commerce-based website. Before you do those changes, you actually test what the impact of those are, and you actually create metrics, and after that, you choose between different options. A lot of clients have large amounts of money depending on their websites. I think I actually worked, we worked with a client that for them to actually be down an hour costs millions of dollars. It's any of these changes cannot be done lightly. If you think about Amazon, for instance, the positioning of all of those buttons which actually trigger you to buy something, that's extremely important. So what these people do when they're building these websites is they perform multivariate testing and they define for a certain percentage of visitors they will show one thing, and then for other visitors they show something else. And then using those metrics and following how they actually interact with it and keeping things flexible and agile, they can actually test various types of websites essentially. So this is again something that clients like and is not entirely solved with Drupal. So how to actually interact with large clients? It's we've talked about products that gets people hooked in. So selling through a working demo is usually a good way to go at it. Actually, Pronovix built this great tool for a walkthrough, which allows you to, for instance, start demoing something reliably without actually exposing yourself to the failures of the random site. I'm sure if some of you have done presentations with actually presenting on a live system, something always goes wrong. But selling through a working demo, showing actually how the system works, is a really powerful tool. Actually, Kuchi, I don't think he's here, but the head of Integral Vision is going to talk about building trust with Drupal, about the relationship between you and the customer and the trust that you build with the customer. That's something that goes a long, long way the larger the client is. Somehow, the larger the client is, the longer these processes take, but as long as they have a personal relationship to you, they know you, they trust you, it somehow becomes more important than for a smaller client, because smaller clients can choose from anyone else. But the large client, if they want quality work, they will rely on a single partner. Having a strong brand of your company, of your organization, and have a clear identity of what you represent to the client, and a clear message that the client can take away and remember. For us, for instance, is that we are trying to make the customers successful. That's kind of an internal message as well. And I think people get a sense of that, and they appreciate that. And a showcase of all of these processes that you're aware of and that your developer team is aware of. Entering this market, I mean, this is probably not really an appropriate slide for this crowd, because most of you are already in this market, and some of you are actually partners with Acquia, for instance, or other large companies. But one of the ways of entering is partnering with established large companies or working with design agencies who own the relationship part of the sales process, but they don't necessarily have the technical background. One of the things to keep in mind, and I think the Pronovix guys can attest to that, is that working with a large client will mean that there will be a lot of bureaucracy. There will be a lot of managers, there will be a lot of project managers involved in the process, and somehow you need to cater for that. Somehow you need to be able to scale, and when you're estimating work, for instance, each layer in addition to the project management will basically somehow add time to the project itself. a little bit about the structure around enterprise projects. This is something that is I kind of took away from the way we work. It's not supposed to be a company sales pitch because I hate sales. It's more about how I see an enterprise project being built up. And I think each of these phases are quite important. First, you figure out what the client wants. This actually is missing in a lot of instances. I think I had a chat with York, or yes, I think it was York, who was telling me that in some of his projects, the client doesn't really want to discuss what they want. They just want to start building immediately. And by the time you get to an implementation, if the client changes their mind, the whole architecture has to change. I often compare building a good website, a reliable website, to building a house. You need to have some sort of foundation, you need to have some sort of plan in order to build the best structure. If you skip that, and if you just start building the walls before actually planning where things should go, it's quite likely that you're not going to end up with a skyscraper. So figure out what they want, have a plan for it, and then build it. It was actually quite interesting for me to see the... how many of you have seen the blog post about the Node 1 crash? It was... I really recommend checking it out. It was about how they were trying to... how they saw the demand for the last two bits in this list. The actually, not the last, the second to last, but the last one, the support and the maintenance in their clients, and they did not evolve their offerings around that. So when the clients actually stopped coming because they stopped the sales, they lowered the sales pitches, the clients didn't stick to them because they were missing the bits that will keep them running and that would keep them happy with the current supplier. So the support and the hosting bits were missing, and the Node 1 partners refused to develop in that area, and probably that was part of their crash. Having external validation of the quality of your work is really important. This is something that we do, but maybe it's something that you could incorporate into your offerings as well, is to actually review applications, review someone else's work for the clients. This is something that a lot of government clients and a lot of large clients need, because you need an objective third-party opinion on a build. So, I'm running out of time and I wanted to have a little discussion, but why do companies still like Drupal? I mean, I haven't actually said too many positive things about Drupal, I think. Although I have a quite favorable opinion, obviously. But why do companies like Drupal? Obviously, there's this free element that it's free. There's no license fee. But that's not really, not just the only thing. The license fee actually helps with testing and playing around with Drupal. It's quite good to evaluate it as a tool, because you can just take it, download it, set something up, and then throw it away if you don't like it. So the entry, the barrier of entry is extremely low, which is good. These companies then become in charge of their application, which is also the downfall, because at the first time, I think, in a large entity's life, if you think about, for instance, a government or a small local council, they will become application developers. And we need to help them, we need to steer them, so that they don't actually do stupid things. You can build fairly solid architecture around Drupal. You have a lot of off-the-shelf functionality through the contributed modules. And by now, there are large companies like Capgemini or Acquia or Wunderkraut or Commerce Guys who can actually service large clients, and they have the capacity of the scaling, of maintaining the bureaucracy that such a project requires. And it also has something about the open source, that open source is becoming quite a trendy thing to use. It's kind of appearing everywhere in the web, if you think about it. It's from the operating system layers to the CMS they use, to the sometimes even the tools around it, is part of this big shift. A lot of government agencies, especially in the UK, for instance, choose open source, and it actually is explicitly in their tender description. The good news about all of these lacking features is that Drupal 8 is coming, and it will implement all of those, or at least quite a large amount of these problems that I've highlighted that currently exist with Drupal 7. So I hope everyone keeps an eye on the Drupal 8 development, and especially supporting those core maintainers who are working on it. There is a Git tip page for Alex Bott, who is one of the main contributors to Drupal 8. I hope you all set up some sort of regular donation to him, because his work allows us to basically be here and enjoy this conference. So I hope you all will check out his GitTip page and consider to donate for him. So we're all excited about Drupal 8. I think that's going to be a fantastic project to work with. And I wish all of you the best of luck to basically compete and, you know, make lots of money. So thank you very much. Any questions? Yeah.
Hi. So the first one is, do you have the presentation online?
Not yet.
All right.
I will put it online.
Cool. And the second one is talking about building what the clients need, not what they want.
Yes.
How do you manage to do that?
I ask a lot of questions. I didn't really talk about that because I didn't have this train of thoughts worked out. But the idea behind that sentence was that if you go to a client and if you ask what they will want everything. They always want everything, right? But usually these are just, it's a little bit like talking to a child. They just dream and dream and want the world. But what we can do in that case is to ask and try to figure out what they really, really need, why they need that. One of my colleagues and friends is using this really annoying technique of the five whys. If somebody comes to you and tells you, I want this, and then just ask me, why? Yeah, because of this and this and this, but why? It's extremely annoying, but the philosophy behind it is still quite useful. The point is to figure out why they need that. And ultimately, you might be able to offer them a solution that fits their need much better than all the fancy something that they made up. Because they don't have your technical background, they don't really know what it will cost them. One of my favorite topics is domain access versus simple websites. You know domain access, more or less? So domain access is basically a module that allows you to split a website into kind of like small fragments. You have a complicated application, but you can serve it on different domains. If you think about a university website where departments have independent websites, you can build that out of domain access. Or you can simply build basic small websites for each of those departments. If the client comes to you and says, well, yeah, we want domain access, we want this content reuse, and if you drill down and you really figure out what they want, they usually don't need all of that feature set. They don't need all of that functionality. They don't need the complexity. All they want sometimes, they just want to log in once. So that you just need a single sign-on system. So the point is to discover what they really need and why they need it, and not just what they say, because that's going to be something stupid anyway.
Okay, thanks.
This process that you have been just describing, the discovery phase, is it a part of sales, or is it part of the project? Get paid for it separately? Do you sell it separately, or?
That's a really good question. I think sales has discovery elements because they need to sweet talk their way into the client, and they need to figure out what the client actually wants. So they need to do some of that. So there is certain discovery around that, but we do sell discoveries as kind of a packaged engagement where we go on site for 1 or 2 weeks and we basically go from meeting to meeting. We go and interview basically every single person at an organization, and list all of the ideas that they have. And for that, that's kind of something that we get paid for.
Mm-hmm. And you go on site for 2 weeks, and this is at the stage where you already won the project?
Not necessarily. Actually, a really good example is a project that we worked with our partner Pronovix. In that we went on site for 1 week on site, 1 week remote. But the point is that we were with them for 2 weeks, asking all of these questions, and they built the tender around those user stories that we built up and around the estimates of roughly what sort of task they wanted to do. They built their call for what is it called? Anyway, they built a tender and they included our work into it. And after that, we won the tender, but that was separate from the discovery itself.
Mm-hmm. And when you're doing discovery phase, do you like show them demo or install a demo for them during the discovery phase?
Sometimes, if it helps. Usually, I would do that if there is kind of if there's no understanding, for instance, how Drupal works. Sometimes they will come up with all of these, again, creative ideas on how to do something. And if you just show them, for instance, oh, this is how easy it is to change a content form, then they might adapt their ideas. One of the aims of this discovery is to not just to figure out what they want, but tell them how easy it is to do. And then they can kind of prioritize their ideas. And if they see something that's in a demo, that helps them to understand the capabilities of Drupal better. Mm-hmm. But it's a treacherous road, because if you show them, oh yeah, I just clicked this together in 2 hours, then after that they will come to you, okay, so why did you budget, you know, 50 hours of
that's
development?
That's where I'm aiming. Like, yeah. When you show them the demo, and partially they force you to adjust it while you're doing the discovery phase, because they want it slightly different, then at the end of the discovery phase, what you'll be selling them?
Yeah. That's why I would only do it for single functionality and just for really really brief exposures. It's we don't really do that in that sense.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
All right.